Professional wrestling, like real life, is full of surprises. Hi, everyone. It's Freddie Prinze Jr. And it's no surprise I can talk wrestling all day, any day. Kind of like how State Farm agents can talk insurance and help you choose the right coverage. When it comes to important insurance decisions, let State Farm support you with the coverage you need backed with 24/7 support. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I can't believe it's our last episode.
I can't either. It's crazy.
My name is Eva Longoria.
And I am Maite Gomez-Rejon.
And welcome to
Hungry for History,
a podcast that explores our past and present through food.
On every episode, we'll talk about the history of some of our favorite dishes, ingredients, and beverages.
So make yourself at home.
Y buen provecho.
We talk about it all the time. You and I were like, isn't this, we are having so much fun. What a ride.
The best. The best. And at the beginning, it's like, what? 30 episodes felt like a million. And now it's like, that's it? 30?
Yeah. Well, because we have so much to talk about. And there's so many things that we were just saying, we could have broken up some of the episodes into two episodes because we could talk on and on and on. We've had an amazing season of conversation about corn versus flour, about amazing ingredients and dishes and native and endemic foods and old world foods and new world foods.
I mean, it's been so fun. I've learned so much and we've had so many adventures.
I've learned so much. You're the expert. I'm just here to banter with you.
I think we're a good team, Eva.
Yeah. What's your favorite highlights of season one of Hungry for History?
Oh gosh. Going to Veracruz and seeing the vanilla. When you impregnated that vanilla.
I did.
That was really special. I mean, just seeing that.
It was so special.
It was incredible.
It was so special. I got to say, Veracruz is up there. When people ask me about Searching for Mexico and those episodes, they're like, what was your favorite? Obviously, Oaxaca. Obviously, Mexico City. And I was like, no. I mean, Veracruz had to be just mind-blowing because I didn't know what to expect from that region. But the vanilla episode, our coffee episode, also from Veracruz, it was really special. I hope everybody can visit Veracruz and go to the vanilla fields because the fact that it's like a dying plant, like it's not going to be around for much longer, you have to go see how a vanilla bean is made.
It's just, yeah, exactly.
I also love when we traveled to Spain because, you know, we did the olive oil and the wine episodes there, but I loved, you know, Maite and I were just walking down the street and started talking about colonized diets and like, oh my God, should we do an episode on that? And God, you know, how do we reconcile being Mexican and Mexican American, but like having Spanish blood and and we're in the mother country and we're in the colonizer country, but yet we speak Spanish. We're both Catholic. We're both, you know, all the traditions that come with it. Like, we're like, this is crazy.
It's so loaded. I mean, it's so loaded. And that led us to our conversation with Claudia Serrato, which was so interesting.
Super interesting. Yeah.
And I think that just having these conversations and just, it takes us all over the world. I mean, some of the ingredients, I mean, we've talked about, like you said, native foods and this and that. And God, it's just such a melting pot. You know, what's one thing that I learned that I was really surprised by, and it might be the silliest thing, that chiles are berries.
I know. That was mind-blowing. And also, what I was blown away by was in our beer episode that that's where really the notion of witches came from, because of the brewery was done by women and they had to wear pointy hats in the market for people to find them. What? That's where the witch's hat comes from? Like, that was pretty fascinating to me.
There's so many things. So many things that I loved.
By now, people have realized, Hungry for History, we talk a lot about a lot of different foods in history, but really focused on our Mexican experience and Mexican cuisine. And every time I mention to people that, you know, UNESCO has added Mexican cuisine to their list of intangible cultural heritage of humanity, which means it's like a cultural treasure. The only other cuisine in its entirety is French. So it's only French and Mexican cuisine protected by UNESCO as an intangible cultural heritage for its farming methods, its cooking processes, endemic and native utensils. It's important. Like, we're like, wow. And I think people think of Mexican food sometimes as not less than, but just like not as fancy as French or Italian. And it's like, no, it's the second cuisine that's added to UNESCO's importance of this designation, and it goes beyond the taste buds. It's centuries of recognition to value the food of Mexico.
Yeah, it's incredible. But what I find really interesting, I mean, there's all of that, and Mexican food is extraordinary on so many different levels, but it took centuries for Mexicans themselves to recognize the value of their own food because of colonization. And, you know, when we did our tacos and street food episode, tacos are, you know, lower class street food. And, you know, all of these labels that were placed over the centuries by different people, it took many years for Mexicans, some, not all, but to think, oh yeah, corn is really valuable. And corn has such a rich, long, deep history. And I think it's changing. I think now, you know, people are really want to learn more. And I think because people are so interested in where their food comes from, that these conversations are being had right now. And this is one of the reasons why I love talking to you about this, you know, because it's exciting to go back and to go forward and, you know, sideways and explore it all.
I knew a lot of ingredients that were endemic to Mexico because you and I are both pretty literate on stuff like that. But there were some that I was surprised about that weren't. I was like, for sure, the lime is endemic to Mexico. No, it's not. It's, you know, endemic to Asia.
Mm-hmm. Right? Or cilantro, right? Like, what?
Yeah. But I also think Mexican food at the heart, I think all food, but specifically Mexican food, is tradition. It's like a series of food traditions. And you can, you know, visit all of these cookbooks and manuscripts and history and see just the evolution of the people and that story that's told through the food, whether immigration, conquest, colonization, you know, enslavement, you know, Veracruz with La Huaca.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That's another highlight, seeing that.
Another highlight of Veracruz, yeah. And then seeing, you know, the indigenous and native culture hold on with such a grip, like we will not give up these traditions or these processes, you know, corn survived that, right? Their stories are able to be told because of the food we eat today. And so, you know, the native experience is all around us.
These crops, a lot of these crops have survived because that's their job, has been taking care of these crops from generation mm-hmm. to generation to generation. And only now are we paying attention.
Well, that, yeah, it's living, it's oral history, it's living mm-hmm. history. And that's why I think talking about food and documenting food and process and techniques is so important. You know, the eating habits and culinary practices of a people or a region or a country is about telling the history.
Just the importance of writing down a recipe, making these dishes, because things, if you don't talk about it, if you don't cook mm-hmm. it, if you don't grow it, the stuff will disappear.
Yeah, it'll be forgotten.
Totally, yeah. Totally.
I also love that, like, discussing food brings to light a lot of politics, you mm-hmm. know, economics, social issues, environmental issues, and the intersection of those issues as they overlap on each other. But the intersection of culture across time and place, and, you know, whether it was a street vendor episode or the decolonizing episode or our cookbook episodes, right? Like, there's a lot of social issues that we touch upon that I think are worth discussing. And I think an easy way into those discussions mm-hmm. is food. Don't go anywhere. Hungry for History will be right back.
Diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
As an actor, a producer, and a proud Latino father, my days can get very busy, which is why I make sure to dedicate time to what's important, like supporting my community through my work, sharing my Colombian and Venezuelan culture, and being present for my family, which is everything to me. Hey everyone, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and we're reflecting on what matters most. I start by giving thanks for good support in my life whenever I need to make the big decisions. How about you? If it's insurance you need, State Farm is there to help you choose the right coverage for you. And State Farm offers great support 24/7. Just call an agent. State Farm is also a big supporter of My Cultura podcast network by helping to share our Latinx voices. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Have people asked you, like, what's authentic Mexican food, or what constitutes a truly authentic Mexican meal?
Yeah, I have a problem with that word authentic, right? Like, what is authentic, you know, mean? Because on the one hand, there are so many versions, I think, of authentic, you know, cuisine, right? So these patterns of mm-hmm. colonization are central to these conversations about food and authenticity. And yeah. maybe it's possible for a country to have multiple authentic cuisines. For the final episode of Hungry for History, we wanted to interview someone cooking food authentic to them while also challenging the perceptions of Mexican food in the U.S. Here's our interview with Chef Ray Garcia, a native Angeleno who draws culinary inspiration from the city's rich culture and California's agricultural abundance. Chef, so one of our favorite questions to ask our guests is, what are your favorite childhood food memories?
One of the biggest childhood memories for me was making tamales around Christmas time, because it was sort of a whole family affair. It was three generations of family working together on one project, you know, all excited, all hungry, you know, and this was when I was a kid. So it just kind of added to that excitement of Christmas time. You know, we had a tradition. We'd start the tamales and then we would get them cooking, you know, go to church, come back, eat the tamales, open presents. So that's something that's always been stuck in my head when it comes to just the idea and the thought of family and celebration and the connection to food.
So who are your heroes? Are there any chefs, either professionals or home cooks, that have inspired you on your journey?
I would say my biggest inspirations and influences have been my parents, and not even from a food standpoint, but just that I say my dad kept me working and my mom kept me dreaming. And I think that's really what has sort of pushed me to the level that I am now, is that hard work and that dedication, and that, you know, no one can tell you, you know, when to stop. No one can put limits on what you can do except for yourself. And that's something that has driven me. You know, on the food side, though, I think, especially with Mexican food, is Carlos Delgado. He has an amazing restaurant in Orange County, Taco Maria. And he opened up Taco Maria around the same time, or a little bit before, we had opened up Broken Spanish. And he was sort of a soldier along, you know, with me in this battle to bring, you know, Alta California and the cuisine to the forefront. He's inspired me and continues to do so and supports me, as well as Jorge Gaviria from Macienda. You know, without him, there would be no corn, there would be no masa at our restaurants. And, you know, his dedication to land-raised corn, organic corn, bringing, you know, these crops back from near extinction has been a huge, huge asset to us.
You've been in the restaurant business for many, many years. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey and how things have evolved over the years?
I mean, I've had a long journey in this business. Started in 1994. I was a busboy at a local Mexican restaurant handing out chips and salsa. In that, you know, fell in love with the industry, fell in love with food. It actually took me in a path to work more on the service side, you know, as a waiter, paying my way through college. After that, fell, you know, in love with the kitchen, with the my curiosity for ingredients, for technique, for execution. It took me on a path through some very high-end restaurants, and what I was finding is that I was getting a certain, I guess, part of my curiosity filled, and I was learning a new skill, but it was still lacking a bit of connection for me. As I was making these recipes, I could do them well, I could execute them well, but it was really just me working off of a sheet of paper that somebody handed me, and I could taste, does it have enough salt? Is it cooked enough or undercooked? But there wasn't that next level connection that I had to other ingredients and other foods. So after about 15 years of cooking, mostly, you know, still a style of California cuisine, but more Eurocentric, I decided to shift into something that connected with me personally, and that was Broken Spanish. And doing so, you know, it allowed me to connect to more than just those superficial ideas of flavors and, you know, is this visually pleasing, but really connecting to memories, to happiness, to joy, to family. And I feel like that allowed me to cook at not only another level, but to connect with people and bring some of those moments to them.
So tell us a little bit about Astrid. I've been there. It's so delicious, so amazing. So tell us about this restaurant and how you evolved from Broken Spanish to Astrid.
Sure, I think the overall perception of Mexican food is evolving, and in a positive way. It's very in vogue, but I think it's still underappreciated and undervalued when it comes to really understanding the diversity of Mexican food and cuisine and culture, and to really assign it that same value that you might other cuisines that are using near identical ingredients, but manipulating them in a different way. And at Astrid, it is a very Californian cuisine. It's a very Californian restaurant, I should say, and specifically Angelino, in that it incorporates culinary traditions from all around the world, but especially Mexico, Latin America, and some of those flavors that I just really enjoy cooking with. And you'll see that appear in many of the dishes that we do without it being sort of a quote Mexican restaurant, but some of those flavors and styles that I've worked on over the years.
For people who might not be familiar with the term, how do you define Alta California cuisine? What is it?
Sure. I think Alta California is more than just a geographic, designation of, the areas of California and some parts of the South, Southwest there. But it's really a cuisine that's rooted in its native Mexican heritage, but takes on inspiration from California, specifically, the ingredients and the techniques. And for me, it goes through a very Angelino lens or Angelino filter. And Los Angeles is a very, there's a lot of diversity in people and cuisine. So you are blessed with a lot of this cross-pollination of information and tradition that works its way into the flavors and the style of cooking that is Alta California.
Last question. Are there any misconceptions about Mexican food or Mexican-American food that you would like to clear up?
Yeah, there's a lot of perceptions and misconceptions about Mexican food. I think the biggest thing is that people's unwillingness to pay for quality ingredients and quality craftsmanship and workmanship when it comes to Mexican food. I think that there's a stigma about it that it should be cheap. It should be, a taco should cost no more than $2 or $3, and that there's, a limit to, the creativity and the, the flavor profile. And that's not it. Mexican food is more than dishes that you order by number and a large plate of rice and beans with melted cheese over the top of it. So I would say get out there and explore and appreciate.
Chef Ray, thank you so much for joining the show. Thank you so much for joining Hungry for History. We are so excited to feature you on our last episode. Thank you so much for taking the time. We've got more after the break, so don't go anywhere.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
I often get asked why I'm such a big fan of wrestling, and it's all thanks to my grandma. Growing up, we would watch matches together, and that bond turned me into a lifelong fan. Hi, I'm Freddie Prinze Jr., and on my podcast, Wrestling with Freddie, we know how important it is to have the right teammate, because things can get pretty tricky quick. So, when things get complicated and you need help, State Farm gives you options. They show you what's possible for ensuring what matters to you. One of the things that matters to me? Sharing memories and revisiting wrestling's greatest moments. And with State Farm's support of the My Cultura podcast network, I get to do just that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
What do you think the perception of Mexican food is here in the U.S.?
I think that it's changing, right? I think that there are a number of high-end Mexican restaurants that have opened up in the city, or in the U.S., rather. But I think a lot of people still think that if Mexican food is expensive, it's not authentic, because Mexican food should be cheap street food. But this, to downplay this Mexican fine dining, just downplays the contributions and the experiences of Mexicans who call the U.S. home. I think it sort of minimizes the importance, you know, and the respect for Mexican foodways and, you know, traditions and innovation and history and flavor. But I think that it's changing. There are a lot of people, I think, that have introduced sort of fine dining, and people are becoming much more open about it. But I think Mexicans are maybe not seen, you know, as accepted as much as Mexican food.
Well, Mexican cuisine is one of the most popular ethnic cuisines in the United States, because it's the most popular ethnic cuisine in 27 states, and Chinese food is the most popular in 22 other states. So Mexico inches out being one of the most popular ethnic cuisine in the United States.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. So I'm wondering, like, if claiming the inexpensive street taco or the hole in the wall, no frills place, calling that authentic, does it inflict damage on an already marginalized community? I don't know.
That's a good question.
Maybe the sort of no frills interior design comes out of necessity. And then this necessity becomes authenticity. So I don't know. What does that mean for chefs, Mexican or Mexican-American chefs that want to carve new paths? You know, I think it's a struggle.
What does it mean also for non-Mexican chefs doing Mexican food, like Rick Bayless, right? He's like an authority on Mexican food, especially in a conversation today about who gets to cook and say and where what.
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting conversation. I don't know the answer to it.
I don't know the answer to it. But yeah, I mean, he has, you know, the PBS show, and Susan Fenniger and Mary Sue Milliken, when they opened Border Grill and had a Food Network show in the 90s called Two Hot Tamales. That would not fly today. No,
that would not fly today. But we also have to celebrate, you know, those Mexican Americans or Mexicans that are carving paths in the food industry as well, like Zarela Martinez, who put Mexican fine dining on the map in New York in the 1980s. You know, her restaurant Zarela, it served everything from tuna with
pipián,
and then her son Aaron Sanchez, who I want to develop a show around, you know, followed in her footsteps, and he's had multiple Food Network shows. He has a James Beard Award. I mean, you know, to celebrate them as well. Or Jorge Gaviria, our first guest.
Yeah. His book Masa is just a national bestseller. I mean, the book was voted one of the best cookbooks of 2022.
And it's last year. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a book on the history of corn. And this is a bestseller. There are so many people, your show, you know, just bringing, I mean, it's a love letter to Mexico.
Yeah. It's amazing. Searching for Mexico really was a dream trip and a show that I think will finally show the beauty of this amazing country of Mexico. Because when you're talking about food, you're talking about people. Mm-hmm. And the people of Mexico are really beautiful. So I just feel like, you know, what's the future for Mexican food in this country? And how are people perceiving this cuisine, or how this cuisine is changing? Because it's allowed to change. It's allowed to evolve. It's allowed to be a fusion. It's allowed to, like, mm-hmm. I think all those things are exciting.
There's so many people that are experimenting and doing such interesting things. And I agree, it's exciting.
Well, let me tell you, we have loved going on this journey with y'all, and we hope you had as much fun as we did. I mean, if you could see our text messages to each other, you guys would know just how happy and excited we have been to do this show.
Thank you to all of our listeners. Please share the podcast with friends and family, and don't forget to like, rate us, leave us messages. We really love hearing from you.
And a special shout out to all the guests who did participate. Thank you so much. You helped make this show very special. So thank you for really making this a memorable season one.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Eva.
Thank you, Maite. Love you.
Love you.
Hungry for History is an Unbelievable Entertainment production in partnership with iHeart's My Cultura podcast network.
For more of your favorite shows, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
What the world needs now is positivity. Connecting, relating, and being human together is where it's at. Hi there, Honey German, and I know life happens, but trust, you got this. And State Farm got us. It feels good knowing that State Farm agents are there to help you choose the right coverage with great support 24/7. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.